Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. 23 flats in non-mature estates were resold for $800,000 in the first quarter of this year. The most expensive, a five-room flat over in Punggol, that went for $910,000. So could we see more flats inching towards that $1 million mark in non-mature estates? Now, experts say that could happen in Punggol sometime this year, a flat hitting the $1 million mark. Now, that has never yet happened in a non-mature estate. So, if you take a step back, what was once thought of as inaccessible and really far out of the way, Punggol Sengkang, for example, is fast becoming desirable an address based in part on plans for the future. In Punggol, people are looking at plans for a new uni campus or an upcoming Punggol district, digital district, and as enhancements to town planning as well. So all part of the reason for the increased willingness to fork out more for a flat in a non-mature estate. So today I wanted to take a look at a book that forecasts Singapore's property scene over the next 10 years as we ask, is now the right time to invest in property with interest rates at a historic low levels and optimism over recovery with vaccination rollouts? What do real estate investors really need to know about saving themselves from decisions that could lead to regret way past buyer's remorse? The pandemic has accelerated new trends, and we can ask right now, will new technologies disrupt parts of the real estate industry, technologies like electric vehicles, for example? And how will trends like an aging population, trends we can see coming, how will these impact Singapore's real estate future? For answers to these questions, I'm going to turn to a noted real estate commentator. He's author of the book The Future of Real Estate, newly published. It's available on bookshelves. Koo Swee Yong joining me this morning. Swee Yong, good morning.
Good morning, Michelle.
Good to have you with me. Now, you identify many different forces of change in this book that is likely to impact the future of real estate in Singapore. I mentioned aging population and a technological change. You also discuss external market disruption. For the listener to get a sense of the flavor of your book, can you identify some of the more important forces of change that you think listeners should be aware of today?
I think you did a great summary already. But yes, you picked up all the relevant key points from the book, chapters 1 to 23. And to summarize it again, one more round, post-COVID, we'll be having new habits and lifestyle changes. Number two, technology. And within technology, you would have, other than autonomous vehicles, we have got a lot we have gotten a lot better at making ourselves efficient in terms of e-commerce, delivery, mobile payments, even peripheral utilities such as waste management, caring for the Mother Earth and sustainability. And that's all under technology and how they may disrupt our lifestyles as well as impact real estate. And then thirdly, especially in the developed nations and in Singapore, there is the irreversible trend of demographic changes. So the three main points: post-COVID changes to our lifestyle, technology-led disruptions, and then demographic changes. And in fact, on the demographic part, I'm most concerned about how our families may be transitioning from one generation to another. And so the book finishes off on chapter 23 with wealth transfer and your real estate considerations as part of the intergenerational wealth transfer. And for most of us in Singapore, we always think of wealth transfer and estate planning only for the rich. But actually, if you own an old modest four-room flat in Hougang that is $350,000 to $400,000, you should still be thinking comprehensively about how you want to transfer this real estate to your loved ones.
That's a great point. And I have to compliment you on the book. You know, I think it's forensic in detail, but really accessible at the same time. A really considered look at the future of real estate in Singapore. And you've written many, many, many books on real estate. So I want to break this down for the listeners so they get the essence of, as you say, chapters 1 to 20. What do you think buyers need to understand about not investing in? Now, I ask this because you have warned in previous books about the downsides of investing in, for example, the excessive supply of properties in Malaysia's Iskandar region, you wrote. You know, and you've warned against the potential downsides of small size strata, non-residential property. So what should we take heed of that could be bad investments?
A few points that we can look at that may be irreversible changes that would be a little bit more obvious for us to extrapolate trends and do some forecasting ourselves. Mm-hmm. For example, business travel would be permanently changed from today. Would we agree to that? Leisure travel might perhaps recover, mm-hmm. but then schooling and working from home, there would be certain segments of us who would be permanently schooling and working from home, yes? And therefore, the impact on office space, education space, do you need so many lecture halls and tutorial rooms? Mm. And then specific to Singapore, working from home means that multinationals can in fact tap into the global pool of foreign talent without having them move to Singapore and pay them an additional accommodation. Singapore can still continue to thrive to be a global hub, but where foreign talent is actually working remotely and visiting occasionally. Therefore, there's an impact on residential rentals. So we can still look for some of these warning signs and extrapolate a little bit into the future. And more obviously, HSBC announced that they are targeting a 20% reduction in their office footprint. DBS has reportedly decided to cut 2.5 floors of their office space in MBFC. Mm-hmm. And then there's just now you reported about the $800,000 and $900,000 transactions in Punggol. Mm. In part two of the book, chapters six to nine, public housing is aging. So while the Punggol ones are relatively newer and still commanding higher and higher prices, we have got to be cognizant that 550,000 HDB flats today are more than 30 years old. Our total stock of HDB is about 1.1 million, so that's 50% of our stock are more than 30 years old. And out of that, 240,000 HDB flats are already more than 40 years old. And because of the reduced number of years of lease left over, the pool of young buyers who are willing to buy these and to be able to use their CPF, that pool is reducing. So there's decaying values of the old HDB flats that we need to deal with.
Yeah.
So the bulk of HDB flat valuations are sort of eroding away.
Okay, I want to address that. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
These are some obvious indicators and irreversible changes that we can start to extrapolate in our thinking should we want to put money into the real estate market.
So I want to just pick up on that point on office space, for example. You mentioned DBS. Yeah, it's the latest bank to pare its office space here. We know Citigroup, Mitsuo are also trimming their office space. But even as banks make their way out the door, tech behemoths, Amazon.com taking up three floors that Citigroup is relinquishing. ByteDance going to come into at least three floors in a building in our financial district. So do you think there's, you know, rising demand for fintech companies for office space, not just here, I mean, here in Singapore? And so, you know, what is the net effect? Are we going to see a decrease or are we going to see things, you know, are things really shrinking in terms of office space?
You see that many of these tech companies actually move in take up some space in CBD. Mm. And then the famous cases such as Facebook, Google, they subsequently move into business parks outskirts of the city because after a while, they realize that the price differential.
Mm. You know, you mentioned that HDB value decay is something that you talk about in this book. Even as the number of retiree households grow, the number of HDB flats over the age of 40 increasing as well. Do you offer any solutions in terms of how to stem the value of decay, the value decay?
I couldn't get much of a solution on that, although we, together with Professor Tay Kheng Soon and ex-GIC chief economist Mr. Yeo Lam Kiong, we did write a proposal which we also informed the ministers about how to get over this 99-year lease decay issue. However, I'm encouraging more families to plan forward to recognize that the old 40-year-old HDB flats they are in, for example, in Bukit Merah, in Toa Payoh, that the valuation drop might actually eat away at their CPF reserves. And if you were 70 years old today and having another 15 more years to enjoy your retirement, that you might want to consider options such as downsizing or moving in with the children.
Mm.
And based on our forecast, which I did with a few very bright SMU students, we think that around the year 2030, in fact, the total number of deaths would exceed the number of births in Singapore. So the population increase trend might actually be stunted by heavily. Already in the last 4 years, 3 years, we had a population decline. In the last 4 years, we see this much in terms of population because the foreign force actually has become more efficient. You need fewer people on construct work sites when you improve your efficiency, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so given this trend of the aging population that we can see approaching, how does this fit into the question of what are good possible areas to invest in when it comes to property investments?
Yes, so in short, if you are feeling very cashed up now and you really want to invest in real estate, I'm suggesting that you hold back for a while, but then consider investing in aged care, health care, but not necessarily putting your money straight into medical suites because purchasing medical suites depends then on how many doctors are available to rent these medical suites from you.
Mm.
And we are not graduating that many doctors every year. Plus, we are also having to deal with a doctor's population that is also aging. So some of them are actually exiting and going into retirement. So to invest in healthcare, investing in healthcare businesses. There are, of course, a couple of healthcare REITs that we can look at, and this would be real estate-related healthcare.
Okay, great. Now, on the topic of REITs, given what we're seeing, a vaccine rollout that's uneven across the world, of course, we're all happy about May 26 and the travel bubble between Singapore and Hong Kong, but, you know, also cognizant of what's going on in India and in other parts of the world as well, which seems to be struggling with the vaccine rollout. What is your outlook for the future of hospitality? REITs that have holdings in hotels or conventions or attractions, what does this mean for those REITs?
In my discussions with people in the sector, I think we all agree that there's going to be a permanent change. So it's sort of like a system that is fractured and then the trajectory in future would change. So I think leisure travel might still hold,
mm-hmm.
Recover back to original, but then business travel and hotels that support conventions and seminars, all those would be taking a significant cut in terms of the volume of business that they would see. And which is why actually it is still, we are still in a strange market because as I see the valuation reports of the hotels or the hospitality companies, the valuation seems to be still holding up pretty well, meaning the valuers haven't really cut the valuations because the outlook is still relatively uncertain. But those of us who are, I guess, a little bit more realistic are saying that perhaps hotel demand would go down. But the luxury segment where you are serving the ultra-rich at $1,000 a night room rate, that segment would still probably hold because it is still considered leisure. But at the business segment, the 4- and 5-star and convention-type hotels, I think those valuations should be permanently discounted for future.
Okay, so this is interesting. So in terms of the impact of the pandemic that is going to cause sort of structural changes, do you see a retail apocalypse approaching?
Retail has all along been eaten. The pie of the retailer has been eaten away by e-commerce. Mm. But more importantly, it was also because of our confidence in payment systems, mobile payment, for example, our confidence that any goods that we buy will be properly refunded and then we can ship the goods back. So the logistics system keeping pace with the payment system, keeping pace with e-commerce, that brought us the confidence to trade more and more online. But then COVID came along and it accelerated our adoption even further. And now we are confident that ordering some char kway teow and getting it delivered to our home, the char kway teow still tastes good. Therefore, the adoption of e-commerce transactions, I think that has already more than doubled since 2000. Continue that way, meaning that you do not now really need to open up a char kway teow shop where you are. You could, in fact, go into an industrial space and fry them and then get them delivered to people's homes.
Mm.
So the need for retail space where you have to serve people who walk past and serve people who are coming in to eat fresh, that need is sort of reduced. Of course, if your food is going to be prepared and eaten fresh on the spot, yes, you would still need a retail space. But there will also be impact from the distanced seating. And so maybe your revenue in the shop would have to be cut by a bit. And then on the part about tourists, retailers who require tourists, not just domestic shoppers, would also find it hard to get back to full revenue. So, for example, in the past few months, we see Robinson's closing, we see Abercrombie and Fitch closing, and then Dimbula that is closing three shops. And that's because people are working from home, so they lost some office workers who need the caffeine fix. Plus, for example, Marche Movenpick that is in Raffles City, they need some office worker traffic. They also need some tourist traffic. They are losing some on both sides. So retail is going to have to be massively changed. I'm hoping that the planners and the authorities might allow some of these retail spaces to be, in fact, converted into non-retail use. For example, you could change it into education use. You could change it into medical use.
Yeah, so is that going to be where the opportunities in real estate are, finding the value in repurposing?
Yes, so over the next 10 to 20 years, in fact, we'll need to repurpose a lot of properties, especially when it comes to disruption. So an autonomous vehicle, for example, would be able to drive around at night to do deliveries. So would your property be able to accept nighttime deliveries or would you have to? And today we see that more and more of us are using apps to get cars. So we may be reducing car ownership, but then that means that the demand on the pickup and drop off. So you see some buildings better suited for picking up passengers and dropping off passengers. Some condominiums have very small pickup drop-off points. A lot of these need to be rejigged, replanned, and renovated. In the past 50 years, all of us have been able to design good buildings where the logistics, the waste management, they are invisible to you, where the replenishment of FairPrice supermarkets or cold storage materials every day, you don't see those trucks going in and out of the mall. But today, we see a lot of Deliveroo and Foodpanda people going in and out of the mall, meaning the building has never been designed for all these small pickups, e-commerce.
Right.
So
right.
Renovation of buildings to suit what technology is bringing to consumers as well as to office users and shoppers, I think that would play a very big part in the next 10 to 20 years of architectural studies and urban planning studies.
It's absolutely fascinating, a book. Sooyoung, we have to have you back so you can tell us how to future-proof our real estate investment choices, okay?
Okay.
The book is called The Future of Real Estate, and it's written by Koo Sooyoung. You've been with me here on Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.